friends, and welcome to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry, and I'm thrilled to introduce to you today my guests, Ryan and Shanae Rice. The Rices planted a church together in New Orleans in 2013, and they join me today to share not only their church planting journey, but also how we as pastors' wives can encourage and help our husbands as they follow Jesus and pastor a church. The Rices bring out some really great practical ideas, and they paint a beautiful picture for us of what marriage can be while husbands and wives are serving together in ministry. I think you're going to be really blessed by them. So here, friends, is my conversation with Ryan and Shanae Rice. I'm super excited to welcome Ryan and Shanae Rice to the podcast. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story today, and I'd love for y'all to just start by introducing yourselves. Whoever wants to do the introductions, tell us about your family, where you are, what you're doing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Ryan and Shanae Rice, we've been married now for 16 years. We have four kids, ages 12, 10, 7, and 5. I always get tripped up on that.
He looked at his wife to make sure.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I had to make sure. I'm a native of New Orleans. My wife grew up outside of New Orleans in a small community called Slidell. And we moved back home to New Orleans, where we met in college, to church plant. And so I guess you would say church planters, parents, love our children, love being in New Orleans. And yeah, and we wear a lot of hats. So I also serve as the Sin City missionary for the North American Mission Board here in New Orleans. And my wife wears a bunch of hats as well. Sometimes too many to name, but yeah.
What are the hats, Shanae?
Yeah, well, aside from a pastor's wife, church planner's wife, but we also homeschool all of our children. We've been doing that for about 10 years now. Our oldest is 12. And I'm over the kids director. I'm also helping tutor at a homeschool hybrid classical school that we have here at the church. So, and just leading women. So
anything else you want to add to that plate? That's right, a lot.
Exactly.
That's a lot, yeah. Where did y'all go to school, to college?
So we went to Diller University in New Orleans, and which is just a small private college here in the uh-huh. city. Uh-huh. And I'm a year older. So we met on a campus tour because I gave him a campus tour.
She taught me how to do my job. So my first official day on campus, I met her. And so she was the first person I met. And yeah, it was pretty cool. So she was managing my job. I was trying to get with her. She wasn't trying to get with me, but the Lord saw otherwise. So there you go.
That's awesome. Okay. But you said you moved back to New Orleans to plant. Mm-hmm. So where did you move from?
Yeah. So we didn't go far. So before we got married, she was, of course, a year ahead of me in college. So she moved to Baton Rouge, just about an hour and a half away. Mm-hmm. So she moved to Baton Rouge. I knew I wanted to marry her. And we had gotten engaged my senior year in college. So I just followed after her to Baton Rouge. And we lived there for about 10 and a half years. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, moved to New Orleans.
Okay. So were you serving in some sort of ministry there?
Yeah. So when I first moved to Baton Rouge, I used my degree and went into training and development. So I did corporate communications. So my undergrad was in mass comm and everything. So I did that for a little while. And then the Lord called me to full-time vocational ministry. And so I went from being a children's pastor to a church planner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big change, moving to the lead pastor role.
It is.
And church planting lead church planting. Pastor.
Right. And you started from zero. And so when we first knew God had called us back, that's something we wrestled with a lot. Well, something I wrestled with too was, okay, I'm a children's pastor and now I'm going to be leading in that capacity. But I think because we were part of, you know, a pretty big church there, it kind of prepared us for a lot of the stuff that was going to come our way.
And some of the things we implemented with our volunteers were a corporate training model. So we spent a lot of time with our volunteers and our parents. So I think that helped us in our kids, in the kids ministry, but it actually prepared us for church planning, because you know, you got to reach the adults before you reach the kids.
You know? Well, take us back to that call. How did you know God was calling you to church plant? And then kind of, you know, tell us the story of how you ended up in New Orleans and got started.
Yeah. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, it was a young guy who feels like God is calling to church plant. He asked me the same question. And I said, you know, you don't always have those God moments every day where it's that mountaintop experience, but you know, when you have, this is God, this is a God moment. And so I think for us, it was God moments, but it was also the little small mundane things that God began to really reveal to us that, hey, this is what I've called you guys to do. And so back in 2009, we began to feel a real uneasiness of where we were, wondering if God was leading us somewhere else. And so we just spent time praying. We spent time, a lot of time praying, a lot of time wrestling with this uneasy feeling, which I didn't know what it was. And at the time, I had started getting an inkling of understanding of church planting. I heard a pastor say one time that, hey, every church that started was a church plant. And so that simple thought, that simple nugget, it was like the Holy Spirit began to just churn in my heart a lot. And then I started really getting a burden for New Orleans and going back. We thought about maybe we should go and do some missions things down there or just really reach people. But God began to really stir in my heart. It was something more than that. And so we went just on an extended time of just praying, seeking the Lord together, but also separately. Mm-hmm. And one day I was just in prayer, and the only way I can explain it, a burden for the city that wasn't there before, literally like dropped in my heart, and I couldn't escape it. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting up off my knees and telling my wife, I said, you know, I'm really burdened for New Orleans, and I really believe God is calling us back there. And at first I was scared to say it to her because she was in the room getting dressed for work. I was just praying. And then I said, man, if I tell this girl, we're going to be moving back to New Orleans, she's going to think I'm crazy, you know? But I remember like I was so excited about like, okay, I know what God wants us to do. I remember knocking on the door and she opened up the bathroom. I said, I believe I know what God wants us to do. He wants us to church plant in New Orleans. And when it came out of her mouth, I believe God is saying the same thing to me as well. That's when I was like, okay, God, you're doing something, because you know, she was excited about it as well.
Yeah, because we were wrestling. It had gotten so heavy. We're like, Lord, we know that you're doing a change. We just don't know what it is. So we both spent like 2 or 3 weeks just really praying and seeking the Lord for clarity just for that. And I remember just the Lord showing me our time in the city, you know, what we experienced, but it was just people that we were connected with. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I love New Orleans. You know, I would totally move back. But I was like, okay, Lord, does that mean, but at the time we had applied for, Ryan had applied for a pastoral position in Michigan too. And so we went up there, we got the job, but then we were waiting for them to confirm. And so the pastor, which we loved, called us back and he told you.
Yeah. So he was essentially like, hey man, I was in prayer like the other day and the Lord really impressed my heart to give you a call. And I know you had mentioned as you were interviewing with us that, you know, maybe one day you may feel led to church plant and stuff like that. I was coming on as a kind of staff position. But then he said, you know, I really felt led to ask you, when are you going to plant that church? And I was like, well, guess no Michigan for us, you know. And so it was just small things like that. And then, you know, different things with, you know, the pastoral team at our church has really started affirming like, yeah, you know, God really has his hand on you guys to go back to New Orleans. And so really from 2009 to about 2014, really, we just stayed where we were serving, growing, learning a lot more. And then, you know, by the time we got to about 2013, we were like, okay, it's time.
Yeah. But we had left our very best behind. You know, like we knew what the Lord was calling us to do in the future for New Orleans. We were just waiting for the go now. We knew he was sending us, but we didn't leave any table unturned. We did our very best, and we loved people really well before we left.
Yeah. Cause the big question that was asked to me when I felt like we were, cause a lot of guys wrestle with this too. It's like, okay, I feel called to plant, which is great, but is it the time? Like, should you be leaving now? And one of the elders at our church asked the question. He said, do you believe your work here is completely finished? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't say yes at the time. And so that's why we ended up staying. And, God began to really sharpen us and use those times as really formative moments for us that prepared us for church planting. Mm-hmm.
Shanae, I want to ask you, because I know a lot of wives, they struggle with, you had the moment in prayer where you knew that God was saying, okay, I think church planting. And then you had the years where you still have your deeper roots and your kids. And so did you have moments of fear or thinking, I don't know if I can do this? Maybe I see Ryan, I can see that for him, but what about me?
I absolutely did. Because, no one really prepares you to go and go plant something else. I mean, there may be times in that people do that, but that's a church planting church. They're intentional, but most churches are not intentional about sending staff out, And so I did wrestle with that. I tried to meet with my pastors, one of the pastors' wives, actually several of them, and those doors were never really open. And so I struggled, but I remember I took everything to prayer. And I remember the Lord telling me when I felt rejection, that what you're looking for, I can give you. Because I know that he wanted to do something fresh, something new. And for us, we left an entire denomination. So it was going to be different, But when I heard the Lord speak to me during that time of prayer, my most vulnerable time, I didn't get up with resentment. I got up with faith, trusting that the Lord knew what was best. Right. Mm-hmm. And then as we got closer to the move, I was pregnant. And I got anxious, I was like, oh, and I remember taking it to the Lord again. And I remember telling Ryan that I felt that the Lord told me to take this time and rest for the work that was to come. So that's when I stopped serving and doing a lot. And I started resting and focusing on me and my husband and what would it look like to be specifically just to be a mom, because as a church planner, you're not going to come into the city with a lot of friends and a lot of people around you. So I needed to focus on finding that new stability, not having my sitters or, my interns pop up and say, hey, can you watch the kids? Now, we really took the time to figure out who we were as a couple, because you have those moments, you have the pendulum swing in your marriages to where you got to get back to, okay, what's our basis now? Like, who are we now? Where are we going? How are we preparing for that? So I spent about the year. Yes, I guess it was the year before I left. I was still a part of a discipleship group, but I spent more time focusing on what was to come.
That's really good. Well, can y'all talk about how, now that you're in church planting, did you say it's been 6 years?
Yeah, it's going to be about 8 years in January. 8 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So y'all are you're really not church planting anymore. You're established, I would assume.
Yeah. And funny, in New Orleans, the metrics are interesting. So it's like, I would say we're now, yes, at a place where we're trying to send as well and really trying to raise up, new church planters as well.
I love that. I love that. So can you speak to what church planting has been for your marriage? So I really want to focus in on the personal side of church planting and ministry. How has church planting affected your marriage, both in positive ways and in more difficult ways?
So yeah, this is a great question. It really is. So I think some of the positive, and then, you know, we could talk about positive and negative, but I think some of the positive, it definitely draws you closer together in intimate ways where there's moments, especially when you're first starting or even as you get into it, that it's lonely, you know, because even if you have folks around you, they here's a reality. Nobody is as excited about this as you are. And so like, while you're pumped and you're going to be there every Sunday, you're going to set up, you're going to tear down, you're going to stay late. You would, I mean, your car, you know, your car can break down, but you'll be like Fred Flintstone. You go like, we're getting to the church plant today. Right.
That's right.
Not everybody has that same zeal, and it doesn't mean that they don't care. It's just that this is almost like a baby that you're, you know, you're bringing along. And so for your spouse, I think for us, I think it brought us close together in that way, where we were really relying upon one another, having to pray together, having to really communicate all the time. And so I think that's been a positive of it. One positive of it that I can think of. I don't know if you want to add a positive to it.
No, I was going to say communication. Like, our communication was really, had really increased, because you were both laser focused on the same goal and the same task to reach that goal. You know, so whether it's with how you were handling your children, how you were living, you know, the finances to support that, you both were walking on that path, like arm in arm, you know, laser focused. So that really helped us in that aspect, because we had never really worked together, you know. As we're, you know, you're like on the job working together, you're doing everything together, you know. So it was good for us, but and it helped us to also prioritize those things together. You know, what was the priority for the day? But with communication and prioritizing, it also became a challenge too. As the church grows, as more people are coming and engaging, and you're having to adjust your plans, train leaders, it's a constant readjustment and a constant communication.
Yeah.
And it may not always go well. And if so, you're going to be the first ones to be disappointed with each other, you know? So that was challenging for us. And because as a wife, you want to be as supportive in every way possible. If you see all of the balls that he's juggling and one is dropping, you're going to go try to catch it before it hits the ground, you know? So, but being mindful of that with each other, because you'll sacrifice whatever you're holding and taking care of to make sure that he has all everything, because he's leading out. But at the same time, he's doing that. He has to do that for you in a lot of aspects.
And I think the negative, I guess you would say, is probably sometimes the time that you spend so much on the plant and the people. And it's well-meaning. I mean, it's a godly thing you're doing. But the truth is, the secret that no one talks about is that a lot of times you can forsake your whole family for a ministry that you're building. And then you look around, and it's like, man, like, your wife's not flourishing. Your home's a mess. You know, it's so much like, you know, and so you're up there, you may be preaching about like, hey, your home should be, you know, flourishing. You need to have devotional time, where the reality is, if the truth will come out, that really is not what your life looks like either. So I think sometimes the negative too could be, you know, for us, I know we had to wrestle with all the time, is that, okay, where am I really investing my time? So I know for me, I really had to wrestle with, like, for example, we homeschool our kids and we're there for our kids. And sometimes I would feel, well, me spending time with my wife and my kids, this is not ministry. Ministry is in the Word with, you know, Joe, who's going through something, or with Joe and his family who are going through something. That's ministry. And so sometimes we, you know, I think I'm just going to speak for me. I put on unrealistic, unbiblical expectations on myself that God never asked me to put on my family. And so what ends up happening, like, you know, your wife struggles, your kids struggle. And we, I mean, that's something I know. I've had to always go back and say, okay, Lord, help me to be balanced where my first ministry, and don't just say it, but actually be about it. Like if I'm with my kids and I'm helping them with math, or I'm pouring into my wife and like, I'm not meeting with Joe, or I miss, you know, miss whoever phone call, the higher ministry is being done. Mm-hmm. And God is being glorified in that.
I am so glad you brought that up. I think that this is a very common experience for church planners. We had the same experience where really the marriage comes to center around the church versus mm-hmm. around Christ.
Yep.
And for us to be, we were together with the church rather than just together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thankful that you brought that up. So how have you had, I know it's a fight. So what are mm-hmm. some things that you do to keep, and this could be for either one of you, to keep the marriage the priority?
Mm-hmm.
I would say one of the things that was helpful for us early on, because we came from where the setting we came from, it was like if the doors were open, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I wasn't a staff, I wasn't on staff, I was considered staff. So some of the same expectations of Ryan, they had of Ryan, they were expected of me, whether they were spoken or not, you know? And so coming into that, like as a church planter, we carried a lot of that. So, and it wasn't until when NAM really started to, through the Sin Network, you know, start with the planners, planner care. And whether it was, hey, we're, you know, getting a gift card to go to dinner, you know, those little letters and those little reminders were like, okay, we know you guys are, you know, on the track right now, but we need y'all to just kind of derail it and jump off for a second. Mm-hmm. Though that's what that meant for us. And then also, you know, for the trips, you know, when we would go and spend time together and have teachings specifically for our marriages and us individually, not having anything to do with the church. That was a blessing to us. But then that opened the door for us to have real biblical friendships within the body of Christ, other pastors' wives, mm-hmm. planners' wives, and planters. We realized we were on this journey together. So it helped foster a community of brotherhood and sisterhood. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as a planner, you're coming to an area and not every church, established church, is going to welcome you with mm-hmm. open arms.
That's right.
You know, and so that was kind of tough, but to know that you have a community of fellow brothers and sisters of the faith in the same journey with you, it made the burden lighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? I think so, like with that, like always that constant reminder from the folks that are around you, but then we had to start taking ownership to be like, okay, we need to calendar, like mm-hmm. we need to live and die by a calendar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So essentially like, all right, like scheduling a date night, scheduling like time we're going to get away, like actually, but actually calendaring it and actually doing it was a big thing. And so making sure like we were scheduling like date nights, you know, scheduling like time away, you know, where we're like, okay, we're actually on these days, like we're gone and, you know, there's nothing that's going to stop us, you know, unless Jesus comes back, you know? So I think those things have been super helpful, calendaring and stuff like that, but also too, like, you know, people laugh at this too, but like calendaring, even intimate time together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah,
you
know, I know.
Like, because it's like, you know, it's a frustration that could come. It's like, oh man, like we're not together outside or inside the bedroom, that kind of thing. But hey, you calendar it, it makes it a lot better and it takes away a lot of attention too. So calendaring has been a blessing for us and we can look at it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't embarrass you. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to talk to you each individually about how you encourage one another. I think for a lot of wives, we're often asking each other, how do you encourage your husband when you see he's feeling overwhelmed or he's feeling defeated? And I saw probably for the first time ever in church planting, my steady husband was discouraged, deeply discouraged. Mm. And so Ryan, can you speak to the wives and help us to know what, and I know this is going to be a little bit specific to you.
Yeah. But
what are some things that wives can do to encourage their pastor husbands?
Yeah, I think the first one, I think, yes, pray for them. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. But I'm talking about pray for them where they know you're praying for them. Meaning, like, okay, your husband is telling you all the stuff is going on. They're discouraged. I think for the guys, his wife saying, you know what, let's pause. Let me pray for you right here. And like you physically praying together. I think prayer is a big one. But also, too, I mean, just words of encouragement that allow them to hear. I think you're doing an amazing job. Like you're killing it. Now it's not blowing smoke, right? Because we know, like, you know, our wives, they're honest, you know, especially if you preach a bad sermon, like, oh, you know what, that was that, you know, you need to work on that. But just the idea of like those thoughtful, like, encouragements. One thing I do appreciate about Shanae too, that she does, and she'll ask us like, well, how can I help you? Like, how can I help you? And I think that's super helpful as well of saying, you know what, like, I know you're struggling with these kind of things, but how can I help you? And it may not always be like, I can do X, Y, Z, or I can take the load on, but how can I help you? What are some things that I can do? So I think those are some things that are super, because men love to hear, you know, are very like auditory, you know, like we're, you know, we like to hear like, man, you're so awesome. You're so great. And I think hearing from your spouse too, if nobody else is saying it, you know, for example, sometimes you're part of a church plant and like things like pastor appreciation may just like go completely over, and you're looking on Instagram and you're seeing all these churches like, man, they're loving on their pastors. And you're like, man, these people don't even see half the stuff I do. So you get discouraged by it. I would encourage a wife, even like saying, you know what, if nobody's going to appreciate my man, I'm about to appreciate him. And I'm going to encourage other folks to do the same as well. And so leading out in that is a big thing. So anyway.
Yeah. That's good. Okay. Well, I want to flip the question to you, Shanae. And honestly, I don't know if pastors often think about how can they encourage their wives in her ministry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you speak to the men listening, if there are men listening, how can pastors encourage their wives in their, as disciples of Christ, but also in their own ministry?
Yeah, I would say I love how you said as disciples of Christ, because I think they have to remember that their wives are their first members. Mm. Their wives are their first disciple, you know, and their wives see everything, you know, not that you have to do anything to please them, but at the same time, just as you would a new disciple or a new member at your church plant, you're going to make sure that they feel welcome, they feel cared for, that whatever you can help them with, you will. So you take that with your spouse and you do the same thing, but to a greater level, in a sense of, if for me, I'm homeschooling. So when Ryan says, babe, I feel there's a little tension in this room, let me pull some of the kids and see how I can help, you know, or getting started with dinner, you know. And I know sometimes we're like, well, you're already doing a lot. You're just getting home and it's late. But it just does something to know that your spouse sees you,
yeah,
and has not forsaken the needs of your home and your small needs, you know, that are big for you, but they could be considered small. And he just steps in and says, I'm not forgetting that I'm a dad. I'm not forgetting that I'm a husband, you know, and I'm not forgetting that you're also my sister in Christ, mm-hmm. you know? So, and asking me, one of our friends, George Ross, we love, love, love the Rosses. Anyway, and George, I remember on one of our first planner trainings, he was like a challenge for planners to be mindful of always checking in with their wives and asking, how are you flourishing? Mm-hmm. Now that's a loaded question. You know what I'm saying? Because especially... It can be a loaded question. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, because you can get in, you know, women, we'll get into how we're not, you know, flourishing all this, but for it prepared Ryan to make sure that when he's asking those questions, he's done something to, you know,
to
make
help
sure
you
it's
flourish.
Not,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it could, and then for the wife, it's being honest, you know, be honest with what your needs are. And we talk about that all the time in pre-marriage counseling and marriage counseling. Sometimes we move into these stages of guesswork. You know, you expect your spouse to know based on your frustrations or whatever. But I would say in constant communication, making time to communicate. For us, we had to meet every week. The end of every week, let's talk about what our week looked like. You know, what did we learn from it? What did we take away? What do we need to change starting tomorrow or next week? Mm-hmm. And we did that for quite a season, you know, but it brought us a lot closer. It allowed us to communicate honestly with one another. And so we weren't taken by surprise, you know, because there was a constant time of communication.
Yeah.
So I didn't wait to have to find out, okay, what's a good time, like double dutch, to jump in and say, hey, can we stop this thing and talk? You know, we really said every week, we're going to have to do this. We're going to make time. And our kids knew that.
That's really good. Our kids
knew when we put the gauntlet down and said, it is bedtime. Okay. Mom and dad have to, there's some things we need to talk about. And you guys need to be asleep. You know, you guys need to go into your room and prepare for bed, you know, but that was one of the best things for me, because I didn't have to guess when I was going to get my time with him.
That's really good. Really good. I'm glad that you brought that. Y'all, I love that y'all are talking so much about scheduling and communication and constantly reevaluating. And I also like that you brought up that as a wife, we have to say what we actually need. I think that in church planting, we, at least I can speak for myself, I kind of took on this mindset that I can't really have needs. There's just so much. And I realized at one point that's unfair to my husband. It's unfair to me, but it's also unfair to him, because I'm not giving him the opportunity to be my husband. Where it in some ways is enabling the church to be the primary.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And we were there. I mean, we were there too, you know, early on, and then having young kids and then trying to get in the homeschool community. I was like, you know, I'm going to take on all this load to lighten his, so he can do seminary and he can focus on church planning and connecting. And I'll wait. And then I started realizing there was a lot of resentment coming up. My anger was not just with him. It was my frustration coming out with my time with my kids, because those were the conversations I was having. They were limited to kindergarten level conversations, you know?
That same thing happened for us. So I'm glad I don't want that for you, but I hope that people listening will take that, who are new church planters, and say, okay, we're going to, from the very beginning, set a foundation of communication and mutual care. But we do have primarily pastors' wives listening. So I want to go back to Ryan and just ask you, can you help us to think through what are some practical ways that we as wives, or you can use your marriage for example, of how Shanae helps you in different areas? How does she help you as a Christian? How does she help you as a husband and a dad? And how does she help you as a pastor? So that's a lot to throw at you, but let's just start with, how does she help you as a Christian?
Yeah. You know, we were going through some stuff, not too long ago. We're going through now. We've been out of our house for about 60 plus days, because our house was pretty much like destroyed on the inside from Hurricane Ida. And so,
I'm so sorry to hear that. Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, and it's just one of the things comes with living down south
in New Orleans.
In New Orleans. Yeah. But, you know, during this time, I think, just as a Christian, you know, it's tough. I mean, you leave home, you come back, and then all of a sudden you literally have to practice what you've been preaching. You know, God is sovereign. God is in control. You know, like, hey, we can trust the Lord. And I think having, you know, my wife walk alongside me through prayer, but also encouraging, especially walking through the Word. So I think just even thinking of that example as just a Christian man, you know, having another believer, of course, as my spouse, that I can talk through theology with, I can talk through things that I'm wrestling with, deep things that I'm wrestling with. I think sometimes guys, here's the thing. I think guys sometimes use it as a crutch to say, oh, we don't have a lot to say. That's not true. We do have a lot to say. And the best person you can probably pour out to and say a lot to could be your spouse instead of everybody else. And so some of those things that maybe you wrestle with, you know, even in your own faith, I mean, talking through with your spouse, to have somebody that says they're listening, they're seeking to understand, but also helping you to grow as well, whether it be through the Word, whether through prayer, whether it be through, like, hey, spurring you along where you may have fears of different things. Mm-hmm. Having a person that says, you know what? Hey, I want to express this fear to you that I have of this meeting I'm going to. And I know you're not going to be right there with me, but I know I got to do this myself. But hey, you know what? I'm worried about it. I have anxiety about it. Hey, could you pray with me about it? Or hey, you know, do you have any wisdom or counsel? What do you think about this? And I think sometimes you got to open up to your spouse and let them know that, hey, welcome them into your world and allow them to help you as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was good. Like Ryan never left me on the fringe. And that was a good thing, you know, but for me though, we have a similar work ethic. So I'm like, okay, if he's going, he's plowing forward, I'm right behind him, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but in our prayer for each other and for the Lord, like he'll say, "Bae, I think this is a bit much for you. I'm not telling you, you know, that you can't do that, but I'm saying we might want to reconsider," mm-hmm. you know? And I think some of the conversations that we would hear around planners is, well, the guys are getting this, the men are getting this, and we have to hear about it from them if we hear about it. But I would say I'm grateful that Ryan never left me on the fringe, because you think about it, when they're faced with large or big decisions, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's establishing elders or deacons, because that's going to come up, you know, I'm glad that he had me to also say, you know, I think you're right about what you're seeing with this gentleman, or I think you're right what you think and what you say about how he's interacting with his spouse. Some of the things that we do see, you know, and these are things that we can discuss in an intimate setting as well. You know, when we're at home behind closed doors, we can have those conversations, and that can encourage him when he goes out into a larger conversation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you bring up a good question, because a lot of pastors and wives kind of struggle to know what's appropriate for us to talk about and share. What's, you know, some wives may not want to know as much. Some yeah. wives may want to know. Where have you guys landed on this issue, and how did y'all think through that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think, and like you said, I think every couple is going to wrestle through it, you know, because I know everybody's uniquely different in it. I know for us, we've tried to have open communication about everything that we know that's appropriate to talk about, you know, that is appropriate. I think there are things that we may not share with one another. Like, for example, if there's a person that we're meeting with, and it was strictly kind of confidential kind of thing, it may be like, you know what, hey, could you just pray for so-and-so, they walking through something, you know, and I may be able to share it later if that person is okay with it. But I think a lot of times it comes down to when you get to those tough church situations, how do you have the conversation? And I'll tell you, give you a good example. You know, I always ask my wife, I say, you know, I want to share this with you, but I don't want to taint your view of this person.
Yeah.
So like, I want you to make up in your own mind how you feel about them, not necessarily how they're treating me, which is hard. You know, it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. So there, we've tried to find a balance in that. One, I've had to trust her spiritual maturity as a Christian, as a woman who's following after the Lord, that she's mature enough to be able to parse out some of these things. And so when we have some of these conversations about, hey, this is going on, or hey, this is happening. You know, now there for us, all I can do is speak for us. For us, there's probably been only a few times where I've like, okay, I just cannot share this at all. But there's a lot of times where we do have like an open communication, like, hey, this is going on. Now, I may not go into all the details. A lot of times it may be very high level. I was like, hey, you know, this is going on, you know, blah, blah, blah. I may not go into all the details, but I think that's helped us because, you know, it's caused her not to be blindsided. But at the same time, you know, I've tried to not give her news about people that would cause her view of them to be negative if it doesn't have to be.
So in that example you were giving, where you say, I want you to make your own opinion, this person, you're saying you do not tell her.
I would say this, I tell her. Yes.
Okay.
I just come with that preface. And I'll say, look, okay, you know, this is what's happening, but I want you to make up your own, you know, mind about this person. So essentially, I'm going to tell you, but you know, when you walk away from here, you know, don't go treat, you know, so-and-so like bad or something like that. Well, she doesn't
continue,
you know,
to share the cookies.
Yeah, right, right. Well, she doesn't. Yeah. But I think it's just trusting her maturity, but also to, you know, that's the kind of relationship we do have, you know, as well, and walk through it.
And for me, with him leading out that way, I can also choose if I'm ready to hear it.
Okay.
You know, I may say, you know what, at this at this point, I don't have the capacity to take on something else right now.
I understand.
Tell me
that.
About it. Yes. After, or maybe next week we'll revisit it. You know, if it's still something that you really need to talk through or something that's lingering or that needs to be addressed, then that gives me time to prepare for it versus, you know, but that's only been a few times. Yeah. Most of the times I do like to be in the know because I want to be his biggest cheerleader. I want to be his biggest support. I want to help him, you know, filter through some things if they need to be, you know, so.
I love how y'all are describing your partnership. I think it's very compelling and encouraging how you work with each other and off of each other. And I'd love to know, I'm sure there've been times where you've kind of realized, oh, this isn't working for us, for our marriage, and we need to pivot, or we need to make adjustments to, for the health of our marriage. Can you take us to maybe one or two of those moments and how you worked through that together?
Well, we're actually in one now. Okay. Yeah, because so for the past, like Ryan was the children's pastor. I was only a volunteer and I was a teacher. So weekends.
At your old church?
At our old church.
Yeah, okay.
So weekends were like, I'll volunteer to teach, but I'm not going to work back here, you know. But, and as the, for the church plant, I said, you know, I have the most kids, you know, coming into the plant. What better way to set the vision and the tone for our children's and family ministry than that's something I wanted to take on. And, but here 8 years in, having to transition so many times, because there, things change a lot in planting, you know, and then we had a merger in between as well. So that was a whole nother type of situation too. And then let's not talk about COVID and then the hurricane. So just all the different drastic transition times of transition. We realized, okay, for our family and then me still homeschooling, it was like, okay, my priorities and the focus has to shift right now. So even though my kids are still back here and I love kids ministry, I love the volunteers, you know, I realized this is as far as I can take it, you know, and I'm okay with that. But now just the waiting to, for the right person or for the team to develop, to help with that transition, but we're there. And, I've wrestled with it because it was something that I started 8 years ago, you know?
Yes.
And
it's hard to release it even when you know you want to.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, okay, so how is Ryan helping you in that? He's the pastor, but he's also your husband. And this involves both. So how is he helping you in that?
Well, he's helping because he was the children's pastor. So he's like, okay, these are some things that we can do with the curriculum. That's not going to be a lot. Just giving me ideas and not saying I don't have time for that, you know? He's making the time to help me, whether we're looking at, okay, how can we train some of the lead volunteers on the check-in system? What would be a quick way, like talking through like the calendar? Because again, he's still my pastor, you know, so I'm still communicating with him, but he's doing a little extra with me as his wife, you know, and kind of saying, helping me like think through the different steps that we can take to kind of expedite it, but being a support and reminding me this is a good thing, you know, that God is glorified, praying with me when I feel like, okay, I can't stop, you know, maybe I need to push it back, you know, helping me pray through my fears and my hesitation and my anxiety.
Yeah. And a big thing that, a big conversation we had not too long ago, literally like probably, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, was this, is that we had to come to the place where I said, you know, look, Shanae made the statement I wish all I could do is focus in on my home, my kids, and just discipling these ladies that I want to disciple.
Yeah.
And I said, you can't. Like, you know, you have the freedom to do that. And I know, you know, people come and they go, but guess what? You're my first priority. And guess what? If, you know, this is the direction God's leading you in, we already see that, you know what, this area, which is a great ministry, it's, you know, at this point, it's just becoming something that's, you know, a little too much, you know, it's pulling you away from the things that you need to. So really just giving her that freedom and that permission to be like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to focus in on the things God is calling you to focus in on. And this may not be it anymore. And that's perfectly fine. And guess what? Christ will be glorified if you're not in the kids ministry anymore, and it will still flourish.
Yeah.
Because the biggest thing, like, and for me, it's like, you know, if my wife is flourishing at home and with these things and not being, you know, dragged down, not necessarily saying it's the kids ministry is a bad thing, but being dragged down by that, I want to help her in that. You know, one piece of advice I try to give to church planners too is, just because your wife is the lady, and just because she doesn't mean she had to lead kids ministry, doesn't mean she had to lead on worship.
Thank you for saying that. Right. Oh my God.
You need to ask your wife, baby, like, you know, or even as a good leader, see where she's gifted at and let her flourish there. So like my wife, like I would say, is probably like the best disciple we have. And so, you know, it's like, man, we need her to use her skill set in a way that's going to help the church flourish and find somebody else, you know? So anyway, if I can go back, a mistake I made, I think early on, but just out of necessity, was, hey, look, great, you're going to take it on. But I think if we could go back in time, we'd have been looking for somebody early on to say, you know, hey, let's transition you out already. So, yeah.
Well, I like that you're saying I'm willing to take on more work in order to help my wife thrive. And that's going to make her feel loved. And I know you feel loved by that and helped. So I just am so thankful for y'all, the way your partnership works in this. It's beautiful to get to hear. And I'd love to know, just as a couple, what you like to do for fun and how do you make time for fun? I think sometimes we forget as pastors and wives that we should have fun sometimes. Like, it's not all work. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start. One of the things I know we tell planners all the time, when you move to New Orleans, you better find a gym membership first.
Yeah.
Because you will eat. Like.
Yeah.
You
all the good food.
Eating is a pastime here.
it really is.
Yeah.
And if you want to, you don't ever have to go to the same place twice, you know.
Wow.
But that's one of the things that we started. Like, the beauty for me in homeschooling is that those homeschooling babysitters are the bomb.com. You can pull them at 10 o'clock in the morning and they're like, okay, Miss Shanae, I'll be there, because they're homeschooling too. You know, they can always get back to work, you know?
Yeah.
So we would do breakfast dates, lunch dates. And now we have a 12-year-old. So he can do breakfast and lunch. He doesn't like to do dinner dates. So we still like really get to learn about our city. We'll go to, you know, museums, and we'll bring the kids along. We go bike ride. We find different things to do, but our biggest thing is the beach. So we will.
Yeah. Now, before COVID was happening, you know, one of the things that we were trying to do together and get into was, I was trying to learn how to dance. So I bought like this, this sounds so lame me saying it, but I bought this video, like, tutorial thing of like this guy, like, you know, like for real, like not ballroom, but like, it's like, you know, partner couple dancing, you know, like do the spin and all that.
Oh my gosh. I love this.
This is so not me. It's so not me. I'm like, Mr. like serious, you know, like I don't want to like look like crazy in front of anybody. So before COVID, you know, we're in our bedroom and I'm like, okay, you know, she's just laughing, you know, just having her grand time at my expense, you know. I guess laughing with me, not at me.
Yes.
She dancing with you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm the brother with two left feet, you know. So So before COVID, we were trying to get into that. And now that everything's kind of, I guess, I don't know if you call it normal, but
right.
So we're trying to find hobbies. And then, you know, working out together too has been something that's been, you know, walking together, but also like working out together. Mm-hmm. That's been a fun thing too. But yeah, just trying to find times to laugh, enjoy, like actually enjoy the journey, because mm-hmm. you're always, I think the thing what a lot of times happen in church planning are couples, you're always trying to get to this destination. It's the proverbial destination.
Yes. And there's not really one.
It's not really one. It's really not. Like, so like, for example, when you first start off, a lot of people are like, okay, when we get to this part or this number, mm-hmm. or we get to this, but you know what happens? When you get to it, the destination like changes all the time. So there is no destination. Uh-huh. Just be faithful and trust God right where you're at.
Mm-hmm. That is a word for everyone listening who is church planting and just in general.
Yeah.
But yes, that's exactly right. So just to close, I want to hear some about New Orleans and what y'all are doing there. So you're Sin Network missionary, which I know what that means, but maybe explain to people who are listening what that is and what kind of work y'all are doing in New Orleans.
Yeah. So as the Sin City missionary, my main role is to, of course, help current church planters in their planting here. And so we ensure they're having coaching and training and they're developing that way. Also, potential planters. So that means that helping potential planters go through our process of becoming a church planter, planning here, and then also partnerships. So helping church planters and church partners establish partnerships and churches to help multiply. So really helping local churches or other churches multiply out to send planners to plant here. So that's part of my job. So that's, I guess you would say that's part-time doing that, full-time church doing both of those.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. But the good thing is that they both overlap a lot, you know, especially with, you know, church planning. Our church is really catching that heart and vision for church planning as well. And so New Orleans is one of those places that is, the population is about 11.5% evangelical. And wow. So it's a lot of lostness, but it's so relational that people love to have conversations. So you can have a conversation with anybody. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it great to engage people, but it also, you have to peel back so many layers. And so that makes ministry here a little different. The way I describe it, you have North Louisiana, South Louisiana, and then you have New Orleans mm-hmm. that is in a bubble all to itself with so many pockets of spirituality and different things. But, you know, I would say this, the harvest is plentiful. It's just the laborers are few.
Mm-hmm. So anybody listen who's considering church planting, you need to connect with the Rises in New Orleans and see if it's a good spot for you.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for the work that y'all are doing there. Have a brother and a sister there in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for sharing, doing that work, but then also being willing to share with me and with my listeners what you've learned and your insight. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.
Thanks so much for listening to By Faith. And as always, you can find resources and links in the show notes for any episode that you listen to on your podcast platform or on my website, christinehoover.net. I've also recently created a website where I've collected all of my resources, writing, podcast episodes, books for women in ministry at howtothriveasapastorswife.com. And that includes books and articles that have been most meaningful to me in my own ministry. So you can go check that out. Friends, join me next week as I talk with Amy Patrick. Amy shares about the really difficult journey that she's been on in the past year and a half since her husband Darren died. She is now a passionate advocate for emotional health for pastors and their wives. And so that's what we talk about together. How can we be leaders who are emotionally healthy? It's such an important conversation. I love talking with Amy, and I really hope that you'll tune in for this episode. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.